Well, as you probably all know, today is Mother's Day, a day each year we celebrate the women in our lives, especially those women who gave birth to us. For most of us, not only did these women give birth to us, but they also loved us and raised us. They guided us and corrected us along the way. They taught us, they fed us, they clothed us, they cared for us in ways that we just cannot fathom many times. And I know there are some out there who do not know their mother well, whether because she passed on when they're young or gave them up for adoption or left because of a divorce or otherwise. And in those cases, I hope that some women came into your life to become that kind of mother figure to you and fill that role of your life. And I know many of you also have a mother that's no longer with you this morning, who came and has now passed on, and who has since died. And I'm very thankful that this year that I still have my mother around. It was kind of scary this last several months here with the sicknesses and things she's going on. But I'm glad she's still around, and I hope there's many more years ahead that I can be with her and celebrate Mother's Day with her. And I'm also grateful this morning for my wife and for her being the mother of my three boys. She is a very worthy mother, and I honor her today as I do all the mothers. But as you've been knowing, we've been looking at the book of Proverbs and proverbial wisdom in our Sunday morning services and all that we can glean from this wonderful book about Proverbs. And probably most of you know that most famous proverb at the end of the book of Proverbs about mothers, or as it says there, the wife of a noble character. We have seen so far in our study that most of this book of Proverbs was written by King Solomon, who is said to be the wisest man who ever lived. He received this incredible wisdom from God because God granted him that wish. I mean, he could have wished for anything, wealth or long life or peace from his enemies, but he wished for wisdom to guide his people. And God said, okay, because you've asked for this, I'm going to give it to you, and I'm also going to give you wealth and health and peace from your enemies. But all that information doesn't apply to our verse today, to our chapter today, because Solomon didn't write the last chapter of the book of Proverbs. This morning, as we look at the book of Proverbs, it's written by someone else. And it's written by a man named King Lemuel. It says there in Proverbs 31, verse 1, the sayings of King Lemuel, an oracle his mother taught him. Now, we know nothing about this man. This is the only place in the Bible where he is mentioned here in chapter 31. And that's all we know about this man. He was a king, of course. It says there he's King Lemuel. But where he was king, there was no kings in the Bible along the line that is recorded about his name. There's no other historical references outside the Bible that we know of that this Lemuel is. So we don't know much about him. Why did he do this one? Why was he included in this great book of Proverbs? We do know that his name, Lemuel, means devoted to God. And I think that's significant, as we'll see later on. But remember that devoted to God is what Lemuel think. And so some people think, oh, well, maybe this is kind of a generic, oh, this is all the kings that are loving, that love, are devoted to God. And so it might be that this is kind of a synonym or kind of a code word or code name for King Solomon. You know, so maybe King Solomon wrote this, or maybe some other king, King Hezekiah, also wrote some Proverbs as well. But I'm not sure why they would put King Lemuel at the beginning of this chapter if it was Solomon. I mean, they've attributed a lot of Proverbs to Solomon, and if this was Solomon's proverb, I don't know why they would make it different or unique at this end. Why not just make it another one of his Solomon's proverbs or sayings or whatever king this might be? Maybe it was another king along the way. Maybe they thought they was a stupid king, so therefore they wouldn't make him wise in a proverb. So no, I don't think that either. But it's not like this is different from any of the passages we've already looked at. They've had no trouble attributing the other proverbs to other men in the Bible as well. We have some proverbs from people from Hezekiah's day, and from Proverb 30 is from Agar's, and there's other proverbs in there that authors in the book. So I don't know why this is Lemuel. There's another possibility, tier two, that this king is of the land of Masa. The word oracle here in Hebrew is Masa, And there actually is mention of Amasa in this Bible. It's actually a tribe of Ishmael. Ishmael was one of Abraham's sons before Isaac came along. And so it was a son of Abraham, and they had a kingdom, Amasa. But we don't know much about that kingdom either, so it doesn't help us out either. So we don't have much to go on this proverb labeled this way. And unfortunately, I'm not sure if I have a good answer to this question, but we'll look at that a little later on. But maybe we can, when we get to heaven, we'll be able to ask God, who is this King Lemuel, and why did he say this about this noble wife, or wife of noble character? So let's start this morning by looking at this picture of this wife of the noble character and see what we can learn from it and see how we can apply it to our lives this morning. So let's start in Proverbs chapter 31, starting in verse 10, is where this poem is about the noble wife. It says, a wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She sends him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships, bringing food from afar. Now, where afar is, I don't know. It's just a little joke. She gets up while she is still dark. She provides food for her family and provisions for her servant girls. She considers a field and buys it. Out of her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her task. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand, she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes covering for her bed. She is clothed with fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected in the city gates, where he takes a seat among the elders of the land. She makes fine linen garments and sells them, and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over all the affairs of her household, and she does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do the noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive, and beauty is fleeting, but the woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned, and let her works bring her praise in the city gates. Wow. Wow. That's what I often think of when I read this verse, this chapter. I mean, who is this woman? It's a wonder woman. I mean, this is a woman who has surpassed everyone. I mean, she does so much. She does everything. She's perfect. She's a perfect wife, a perfect woman, perfect mother. How could anyone possibly measure up? And I've heard women also, as they thought about this verse, think, oh, wow, this is just something that I cannot rise up to. I just, every time I read it, I think, how many of these failings I have fallen short on? And I agree, because this seems like this description of this woman, this wife of noble character, is just the send-all, be-all of a woman. Who can find them? And in fact, I often wondered if that first initial proverb there, and they say a wife of noble character, who can find her, is not really a question. Well, who can find her? She doesn't exist, kind of thing. And I'm not sure if that's the case either. But she cooks, and she cleans, and she shops, and she shows, and she sells and buys. She has her kids and husband under control. She is smart. She is funny. She does it all. I mean, it's just kind of one of those things that you think, how can this woman possibly exist? And I've wondered this for many times, and I thought, well, maybe this is kind of one of those things like in the book of Proverbs we looked at before, that this is a personification of God, that maybe this is characteristics of God loving us like a mother. I don't like the, kind of like the chapter in chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians in the New Testament,
The great love chapter talks about kind of how maybe God is this love who is patient and kind and does not boast and has not envy and so forth. Maybe this is kind of like a picture of God in the book of Proverbs and saying, hey, God is kind of like a mother and he does all these things. But if we look at some of these characteristics in this book, it does not sound very much like a personification. This is actually seems like it's a mother of some kind, a wife of some kind. Unless it's very, very highly symbolic, I'm not sure if that's the answer either. I mean, there is some Proverbs that we looked at so far, kind of a personification of different ideas. We saw a personification of wisdom as a woman, and that woman, you know, says, come, I want to hold you to myself and make it learn and things like that. And we saw a personification of the sinful woman and the sinful temptation with this adulterous woman saying, hey, you know, come on, I'll give you all the good things and nothing bad will happen and all that. But this doesn't seem like that's the same case here. And so I struggle with this passage and with this thing. What does it mean? Who is this for? How can I apply this passage? Because it just, like I said many times, it's just so overwhelming to many women that they can't measure up to this standard. This proverb was written by, in this, to top it off, like I said, this is written by an unknown author, Lemuel, about a woman who cannot possibly have all these characteristics. So what can we take from this passage other than feeling bad about ourselves? And I don't want us to do that. In fact, as I looked at this passage some more, and even the passages before this, this Lemuel also wrote these words just a few verses before this big thesis on the noble woman. He says, don't spend your strength on women, your vigor on those who ruin kings. I mean, this is the same Lemuel says, hey, don't waste your time. So he's saying, hey, there's no such thing as a noble woman. There's no such thing as this wife of noble character. No, I don't think so. But then again, I looked at that conclusion to this passage. Charm is deceptive, beauty is fleeting, but the woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned and let her works bring her praise at the city gates. This was written, and this passage was written by a man whose name meant devoted to God. What's the connection here? A man who's devoted to God is writing about what a woman means that is devoted to God, that fears the Lord. I think this is kind of a good summarization of the whole book of Proverbs. We talked many times in this series about the wisdom behind that fear of the Lord. I told you this phrase is used over 11 times in this book. This book even starts out by saying, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, right there in the first chapter, in verse 7. And it is useful, it says in that first chapter, for attaining wisdom and discipline, for understanding words of insight, for acquiring discipline and prudent life, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to the simple and knowledge and discernment to the young. I mean, this throughout this book, this phrase, the fear of the Lord, this is good, this is something we need to accomplish in our life, is very relevant and repeated many times. This idea kind of permeates this book. And now at the end of this book, we see it repeated for the last time. It is as if God is showing him that this reverence for God, this fear of God, is very important. Could it be this is the purpose behind this inclusion in the book of Proverbs? Could it be this is why this King Lemuel wrote this to kind of say, hey, I got an idea about what we really need in women. We need someone who fears the Lord. And I'm going to make this kind of as a conclusion to this book of Proverbs, and this is why he is inserted at the end. Could this be the purpose behind this inclusion? Is this the reason why it's authored by a man that whose name means devoted to God? So I want to take a closer look at this last chapter verse here, this last verse about all these things, and it says about these charms are deceitful. What are charms? Well, charms can be used both positively and negatively, right? In fact, the word charm is from the Hebrew word hana, which with the word Hannah, the name Hannah we get from that, meaning charm or grace or goodness. It has beauty and grace surrounding that name. And so there's good things about charms. It's very graceful, very loving, very positive. Charms can be very attractive many times, but they can also be used to deceive. So you see, you can pretend to be gracious many times too. People deceive you because they're not really, they're trying to trick you, and they're not really that kind of gracious people. They're trying to con you type of thing. It reminds me of another proverb about a sheep and a wolf in sheep's clothing. Now, of course, that proverb goes all the way back to Aesop's fables back before Christ, but then Christ, of course, mentions it in Matthew chapter 7 that they are like a wolf in sheep's clothing. So maybe this guy Lemuel was trying to say that even good-looking things can be used in an inappropriate way, can be imitated, can lead people astray. You think, see, sometimes things can look good on the outside, but inside, as Jesus says, they're full of rotten trash. You don't have to look far for an example of this, because people have used their charms and good personalities to influence people throughout the ages. In fact, looking back at the book of Proverbs here, we see in Proverbs 26, verse 24 and 26, a malicious man disguises himself with his lips, but in his heart he harbors deceit. Though his speech is charming, again, same word, do not believe him, for seven abominations fill his heart. His malice may be concealed by deception, but his wickedness will be exposed in the assembly. I mean, there's an idea that some people look on the outside as so good, so wonderful, so great. They're deceptive. Sometimes the image you have of people that they portray on the outside is not the actual person on the inside. Take, for instance, John Wayne. John Wayne, you guys all know about John Wayne. He is the epitome of male macho-ness, right? He's a big actor in those days. There's movies galore about him, macho things. But the image of John Wayne being powerful and a manly man, muscular and powerful, can be deceptive. Let me read you a little article here I found. It says, General Douglas MacArthur thought John Wayne was the model of the American soldier. Critic Eric Benelli thought he was the most important man in America. Even politicians like Ronald Reagan imitated his manner. Phrases like, saddle up, or lock and load, have become a battle cry for many. But Gary Willis's book, John Wayne's America, points out that the real man behind the legend isn't always what he appears. Willis noted that the big screen warrior who denounced those who refused to go to Vietnam as soft got out of serving World War II by trying to further his career. That the star who rode many horses and started many horse epics actually hated horses. That the indomitable man of the West was born in Iowa with a very unmacho name of Marion Morrison. Y'all know that? John Wayne's real name is Marion Morrison. Not very macho, is it? And yet that image of John Wayne is what we come to expect. And I think we got a similar thing here in the book of Proverbs. That this woman of noble character looks good on the outside, but as we've seen, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. You see, not only is charm deceptive, but beauty is fleeting, right? And again, we don't have to look far about beauty fading. Living here in America, our idea about what beauty is constantly changing. Not only is it changing, but as we get older, our beauty doesn't last, right? You're only beautiful if you have the right hair color or the right style clothes or the right fashion or the right body shape or all these things, these figures that you need to have. You need to have the perfect skin and not have any wrinkles and all this beauty stuff that we have that they have nowadays to look good on the outside. But that kind of beauty never lasts. As we get older, our skin starts to wrinkle. We put on a few extra pounds, maybe a few more extra pounds. Or things happen that just don't line up with our ideas of beauty. We might get in an accident and get scarred or whatever. Beauty doesn't last. In fact, the King James Version says the word vain. Beauty is vain. Right? I kind of like that because it reminds me of vanity. And vanity reminds me of Ecclesiastic, where Solomon, who wrote Proverbs, most of Proverbs here, says, hey, things are just vanity, chasing after wind. It's futile. It's kind of one of those things that's just meaningless. The word is used some 38 times in the book. Meaningless, vanity, a futile, a chasing after the wind. In fact, this word of vanity has actually been used as a breath or a vapor. Kind of one of those things that you see like in the wintertime where it's gone. You try to capture it and you can't. Beauty is just like that. You try to capture what is beautiful, and either the culture changes and then says, oh no, that's not beautiful anymore, or you change because we're getting older. It's like a vapor. It's like the morning fog that quickly disappears after the morning sun comes up. It's temporary. And yet beauty is something that many people put their trust in. They try so much to make that exterior look so good. People that trust in there, and yet they neglect the interior. But that's just what the opposite of what the Bible teaches. In fact, I would argue this morning that this passage teaches that internal beauty is more important than the external beauty. Because if you look through this book of Proverbs, this chapter here, chapter 31, there's no mention of how beautiful this woman is. There's no mention of her exterior, what she's wearing or anything. I guess there is, in verse 22, it does mention that she's clothed in fine linen and purple, but I think that might be more symbolic, that she's kind of royal. She has that kind of royal lineage about her, that appearance, that what she is. Her nobility, her respect is what's attributed here. But what is stressed in this chapter is all the things she does, her character, her actions. It's someone who is not concerned about the outward appearance, but someone who is a noble woman is based upon who she is. And I think that key characteristic on who she is right there in that last verse there. Charm is deceptive, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord, a woman who fears the Lord, one who trusts God, is to be praised. That is the key to understanding this chapter, I think. Because all these characteristics talk about how a woman who's following God and following his leadership, allowing him to minister to her heart, to her people around her. So what does it mean to fear the Lord? Again, we talked about this a little bit in our previous sermons, but chapter 8, verse 13 says, all who fear the Lord will hate evil. Therefore I hate pride and arrogance and corruption and perverse speech. Kind of sounds very much like Proverbs 31. Proverbs 16, verse 6, again, very similar. It says, through love and faithfulness, sin is atoned for. Through the fear of the Lord, a man avoids evil. The fear of the Lord, very important. Very important. And finally, Psalm 19, 23 says, the fear of the Lord leads to life. Then one rests content, untouched by troubles. Again, that reminds me of Proverbs 31. And especially verse 21, it talks about being safe and well-clothed when the snows come. Or verse 25, that talks about laughing about the days to come because she knows who she can trust in. She knows who she can depend upon. It's God. She fears the Lord. Fearing the Lord is obeying God's commands, living according to his ways, living a life honoring and pleasing to him. That's what true wisdom is. That's what true charm and beauty is. And only a woman who fears the Lord can embody all of this. And this is where, like I said, I think this chapter comes into play. It's kind of the summary of the wisdom of all this book that it entails, summed up in the characteristics of this woman. I think Lemuel is putting his name and using his name as this guy devoted to God to put a big old exclamation point on this book. Say, hey, fearing God is like this noble woman. This ideal woman is, as the name suggests, one that is devoted to God. This is the woman, in whatever she finds herself doing, should be first and foremost a woman who fears the Lord. This chapter, I think, never was intended as a role model for mothers to follow in every specific detail. It just gave us kind of a generalized statement about how these women interact with the world around them based upon their fear of the Lord, based upon their life, based upon the way they live in line with God. It's not a measuring rod on how a good mother should be or a standard that you need to fulfill in order to be considered a good person or good mom. But in a way, all these are like kind of charms that kind of deceive us, but they are about the beauty inside. That's the key to this chapter and this idea that a noble woman is one who fears the Lord, one who puts her trust in the Lord with all her heart and all her soul and all her mind and all her strength. A woman who leans on the Lord and not on her own understanding. A woman who acknowledges God in all her ways and allows Him to direct her paths all the way through life. Now, there's a hymn that I just love, and I wasn't sure if we would sing it this morning, but it's sung to the tune of, "O 4,000 tongues to sing, O 4,000 tongues to sing, my great Redeemer's praise." But the words are a bit different. And it's a wonderful praise of God. And I said it's wonderful to praise God for 1,000 tongues to sing. But I like the title of this psalm as well. Oh, okay, well, I missed that. But the title is, "Oh, for a heart to praise my God." And I like the words of this song. Let me read you some of the stanzas here. It says, "Oh, for a heart to praise my God. A heart from sin set free. A heart that always feels thy blood so freely shed for me. A heart in every thought renewed and full of love divine, perfect and right and pure and good, a copy, Lord, of thine. My nature, gracious Lord, impart. Come quickly from above. Write thy name upon my heart, thy new best name of love." I think this is the Proverbs 31 woman. This is what the Lord desires more than even 1,000 tongues singing His praise. He wants a heart that is honoring and pleasing to Him, that is following Him. Mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers who do not trust in their beauty, do not trust in their charms. Those things are not real. Those things are temporary. Those things will fade away. But what the Lord seeks is a woman or a man who seeks after his own heart. Someone who uses that heart to care for her husband and children. Who does her task, like it mentions here in Proverbs 31. Because if you strive to have that as your goal in your life, that you would trust the Lord, that you don't fear the Lord, that you follow Him in all your ways, then these things will start lining up. These things will start happening in your life because you'll be loving people. You'll be loving your children. You'll be loving others. You'll be able to be used by God in various ways, in various areas of your life. Not necessarily in all these things about merchant ships and bringing things from afar and doing all the sewing and all the cleaning and all the... No, but it'll be a heart for God. Oh, for a heart to praise my God. You see, when a woman seeks God with all her heart, she'll take care of her children and her husband. She's not bothered by the things around her because her heart is steadfast in God. So strive to be that kind of woman. Make that your goal in your life. Hey, Lord, I'm going to fear you. I'm going to follow you. I'm going to make that my goal. And all these things will be added to you, as Jesus says in the New Testament. Strive to be that kind of woman, that kind of mother, that kind of wife. Because if it's your goal in life to fear the Lord with all your heart, soul, mind, body, and strength, you'll truly be a woman of noble character. And I haven't even got to the best part of this psalm. Because I love this psalm because... Because, let me go back to the last verse here. Charm is deceptive, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Oh, I guess I was supposed to go to the beginning. Anyways, that first verse there in chapter 10 says, "A wife of noble character, who can find?" That term, noble character, is actually a great Hebrew word. And it's actually a word that was used previously in the Bible about Gideon. In Judges chapter 6, verse 10, an angel comes to Gideon and says, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." Gibor Ha'el, mighty warrior. And as of course you know the story of Gideon, he led 300 men with just pitchforks or with just torches and trumpets and defeated 120,000 men in the army, right? This mighty warrior. Why was he a mighty warrior? Because he trusted God. When God said, "Hey, 300 men is all it's going to take," Gideon said, "Okay." He trusted God. He was a mighty warrior because he feared the Lord. And at the beginning of this chapter, a wife of noble character, a mighty warrior, a woman who is a mighty warrior, fears the Lord. Isn't that great? You women out there can be mighty warriors and defeat armies because you fear the Lord. That's what God has in store for you. That's why we can celebrate mighty warriors today in our lives, because yes, they might cook and clean and do all the good things. They might not do that. But if they fear the Lord, oh, praise them above all else. They are to be praised. Their children and husbands should be thankful for them. And I'm thankful again for my wife and my mother as well. Praise her for being the woman who lifts up the name of the Lord, who follows him. This is a woman who can be praised. Are you that type of woman? Are you that type of person who fears the Lord? Again, this doesn't necessarily need to be about women either. Men too, like John Wayne, Marianne Morrison, can truly trust in God and be mighty warriors. Let's close in prayer. Dear Lord, as I look over this congregation, I see many, many mighty warriors. They might not think they're mighty warriors out there, but with your help and with your guidance and with you being trusted in, they can be that kind of mighty warrior. They can conquer everything. They can defeat all that comes against them because you are with them and their trust is in you. Help us, Lord, be women and men who trust you and follow you all the days of our lives. Make us those kind of mighty warriors in Jesus' name. Amen.